So by way of introduction, we've got three really, I think, panelists that come at this from a very different vantage point, but also all highly informed on what's going on in the world of baseball analytics today. We've got Eduardo Perez. You're familiar with Eduardo from on a lot of levels. Former Major League Baseball player for 13 years. That's at the top of his list of credentials, but they go well beyond that. In addition to being the son of Hall of Famer Tony Perez, he's done some great work on both MLB Network Radio and Sirius XM, as well as his media roles and his broadcast roles, broadcasting for teams. He was also at one point the bench coach of the Houston Astros and has worked actively with clubs. Next to him, you've got John DeJuan. John was the founder of Baseball Info Solutions, and before that, he has a long storied history in the world of baseball analytics with stats and other organizations. And he has really been a pioneer in so many ways. He's certainly led the charge on defensive metrics and defensive measurement, but that alone belies the broader impact that he's had. And I think one of the things that that John has done most effectively is he's taken very sophisticated concepts and made them digestible in the form of the publications that he produces, the writing that he does, and what the whole organization does, not just John, but Baseball Info Solutions and Sports Info Solutions, as it's now known, as it branches out to impact other sports beyond baseball. So allowing the information to be conveyed in a layman's way has helped, I think, spread the growth of analytics throughout the game. And to my immediate right is Rob Nyer. Rob goes back to when he was a research assistant for Bill James. And if we all had to have a start to our baseball careers, I guess that's where we'd all want to start from an analytics standpoint. And from there, he's gone on to work for Fox and a number of other outlets, and is a prolific writer, has written a number of baseball books, including we'll talk a little bit about his most recent endeavor, because it really does relate to the state of analytics in the game today. But I wanted to welcome our panel, a little round of applause for them. So let me start by tossing out a question, and I'll start with you, John. We look at where analytics has come over the last, let's just look at the arc of this conference, which is 8 years. So the last, this conference began in March of 12, which means the 2011 season was in the books. We're about to hit the 2012 season. I mean, you start to think about where were we from a defensive shift standpoint? Where were we from a data capture standpoint? Yes, PitchFX was out there. That was before the birth, though, of StatCast. John, talk a little bit about that era, that 2010-11 era of baseball analytics.
Well, Vince, I appreciate you starting with me, because us old guys have to stick together.
We also eat earlier, too, right?
Yeah. Well, it was really, really cool for me in 2012 at this first analytics conference for Sabre Analytics Conference, was when we had the opportunity to present information on the shift. So that was something that had not really gotten started. There was one team starting to shift a bit, and that was the Tampa Bay Rays. And some of the other teams like said, wait, they're doing pretty good. What are they doing different? Hey, they're shifting. And so we started putting together some analytics, and this was the conference where we came that very first year and presented some of that. Some of the things that, for example, we were doing in the industry was computerized stopwatch. We would have the computer help us figure out how long it took the batter to go from home to first, or for running from first to second. And then we used frame counting technology with video and started tracking pitcher delivery times to first. And so some of that stuff that used to be, okay, we have some smattering of information from scouts, now we're going to start tracking that at a more in-depth level. So that was one example of how the state was back then.
Yeah. And we've come, a long way. Rob, in your recent book that you produced, you really took a look deep inside a game, and you chronicled a lot of the things that are going on in the game today in terms of the way we think about it, the way that gets applied. Talk a little bit about, you know, your sights of where you see the state of analytics today and how it's changed.
Well, for me personally, the biggest change is that at the first conference, which I was thrilled to attend, you still had the sense that with a little bit of work and a few conversations, you could get a pretty good handle on everything that was happening in the world of analytics. And I just don't have that sense anymore. I feel like if I'm lucky, I can just get a small bit of it here and there. But that's because at that point, there were teams that didn't even have analytics departments yet. The Phillies didn't have one. And I wrote down a great quote, Charlie Kerfeld, which I stole from something somebody in this room probably wrote, but Charlie Kerfeld said a year before that, before our first conference, we don't have an in-house stats guy, and I kind of feel we never will. I mean, imagine that now. Mm-hmm. And the Phillies were way behind and remained way behind for some time, but now behind means you only have five or six people in your analytics department instead of 15 or 20. And with all that work being done, most of it proprietary, it's incredibly difficult to have a great feel for all the work that's being done. One thing that didn't exist then that does now, of course, is all the radar technology, the camera technology, Edgetronic, Kinetrax, Track, all those things. Those just didn't exist then. Those have revolutionized the game and the way that the game is taught.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing what technology has done. Eduardo, from your standpoint, you know, you've looked at this more from the inside. So talk about the arc that you've seen and how you've adjusted your perspective on the game and how you think about the game based on what you've seen in the last decade.
By the way, thanks, guys. Really, you made my life a lot more difficult, but I love it. It's changed. It's changed big time, and. You know, relating to what John had said earlier, 2012, where we were in baseball, it's completely, completely different, I would say even in the last 3 years. But I'm going to fast forward and go, 2012, I was a hitting coach for the Marlins. We were still doing things of just looking at video, we're still charting out things positioning-wise. I go all of a sudden from the Marlins to Jeff Luno's Houston Astros, okay? And there, I'm the bench coach. And I see you pumping your fist over there. But the bottom line is, I had to deal with Sig Meidahl. And everybody's now shaking their heads going, okay. And for me, it was an unbelievable experience. One, that I got a call by the Houston Astros, knowing that we were going to lose more than 100 games, but knowing that we were going to learn 100 times more information than any other organization out there. Because we were willing to take on risks. And I remember, I was in charge of defense. And I remember going to Yankee Stadium, and we shifted like crazy. We shifted on all the left-handed hitters. We had the data to go after it, and we were still looking to see and proving theories out if hitters, at that time, we weren't talking launch angle. We were just doing a lot of defensive metric work. We wanted to know if they could adjust and go the other way on the ground, even with runners in scoring position. We tested theories out of why do the no doubles theory of playing down the line, where the average doesn't really give you the numbers, say, play normal, play in the hole, play in the 4-3 hole, play in the 5-6 hole. So we tested all those theories out. We would bunch it in to see if they worked, and a lot of them did. And going back to that New York Yankee game, media members would come up to me and say, what are you guys doing? This is ridiculous. Shifting? This is never going to catch on. I think it's now the solution. Now we're wondering if we should, quote unquote, as they say, ban the shift or not. Left-handed hitters would say yes. Purists would say yes. I fell in love with it. And I got a feeling that all you guys here that have one of these here have fallen in love also with the numbers and where it can go. And I think this is the eighth year of this conference.
Yeah.
I think we're just at the beginning. We're just at the beginning of finding out, yes, from release points, as you said, Edgetronics. We went from the timing just on a video scale from first to second, from home to first. guys, it's who has the edge. And we're seeing it now, the way that Major League Baseball teams are hiring not only their analytics staff, but how they're hiring their coaches and their managers. Wes Johnson was in Arkansas last year, pitching coach for the Arkansas Razorbacks. He's now the pitching coach for the Minnesota Twins. And why? Because he's well-versed in how to be able to read what the track man says. Other teams used to use him as an outside counsel. Not anymore. He belongs to an organization. And that's what you want. You want talent to be able to interpret that information and give it to the hitters. One last thing before that. Yesterday, we were in Fort Myers broadcasting a game. And Jake Cave had two hits. Ground ball to the shortstop. If the shortstop would have been playing normal positioning, he was shifted. And if that would have happened in 2013, and I was the one positioning, the pitcher would immediately look at me saying, what are you doing? Where's this data coming from? Instead, it's like, okay, he hit it in the hole, so be it. No big deal. The players have already made the adjustment. They're already believers. They know this is already here to stay. Now, the question is, you know, how far can this go? I don't think we even know how far the technology can still take us.
Yeah. And so what we've seen, it seems, is that pitching and defense have ruled the day with the new data.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's because PitchFX was visible in the public domain and out there for a while. The defensive metrics that Baseball Info Solutions and others produce have really driven defensive intelligence. But where are we on hitting? What's going on the hitting side? And is it about to catch up? I don't know, Rob, do you have a perspective on that? Or anyone, really?
I'll just briefly say that no, I don't particularly, except that it seems to me that the advantage on the data side is always going to be with pitching and the defense, because of course they initiate the action. And there are many more variables in terms of pitch selection and pitch creation and pitch shaping and all that than there is with a batter's swing. So I think that, and by the way, that's why the Atlantic League's experiments this season, they all seem to be predicated upon helping the hitters, mm-hmm. because somebody has to. Mm-hmm. The technology isn't going to, at least not nearly to the same degree.
Yeah, John?
Well, first of all, my apologies to the women in this group, but the chicks love the long ball. Mm-hmm. That was the old commercial back in the day. I know most of you never heard of it, but the chicks love the long ball, and that was the commercial on TV. And, you know, hitting is always where the analytics drew people. And so you go back to, you know, when Bill James first started doing his incredible work, he was looking at hitting. He's creating runs created and isolated power and speed scores and doing all this great stuff with hitting. And I think then when some of the data that we did at Stats or Baseball Info Solutions and other organizations, we were able to focus on the defense, because now we knew where the ball was being hit and we knew where, you know, if the player could get to that ball. And so I think that was when the defense analytics got started. Then PitchFX came out, and, you know, God bless them, they made it publicly available. I don't know if they did. I don't think they did it intentionally, but they made it publicly available, and all people like you guys could get access to that information, and it really provided some very good information to, you know, analyze pitcher and spin rates and how much the ball broke. Well, I guess we didn't have spin rate yet, but how far the ball broke and the velocity. And now there's StatCast. And StatCast is the, you know, the be-all, end-all. It seems like there can never be more information than you have in StatCast, but there will be more. But StatCast, I think, really helps hitters. I think you're starting to come back around to be able to look at what the hitters are doing, you know, like the launch angle that you talked about and exit velocity. And so now you're starting to have some more information that helps the hitters. So I think that's where we're at right now.
First of all, you dated yourself. I love it. Second of all, I also love the long ball. But I will tell you this, John, and the rest of the guys out there, it's, even without the data, the pitchers are always going to have the advantage. It's there in the numbers. It's Ozzie Virgil, I remember, once told me, he said, Ozzie Virgil Sr., he said, either you're a low ball hitter or you're a high ball hitter. You can't be both. And this was more than 20 years ago that he told me this. I think with more education that we know on the on the strength of the pitchers. Yes, there's they usually pitch to their strengths. And in today's game, the way the pitchers pitch, where we're seeing a lot of games on TV, that fastball up is the biggest hole for all the hitters. Why? Because hitting coaches are teaching launch angle. Because if you ask J.D. Martinez, one of the best hitters in the game, or anyone, he'll tell you, all I'm trying to do is hit the ball up the middle in the air. I mean, trying to hit the ball on the ground, line drive, that's not, you don't see that much. The Milwaukee Brewers the other day, they have screens on the infield. Hit it over the screen. We don't want anything on the ground. Why? Because positioning is a lot better when it comes to the infield, when it comes to the shifts. So let's beat the shift by hitting it over the shift. And what that creates is a big hole on the top part of the zone. And because of that, you're seeing a lot of swings and misses. You're seeing a lot of strikeouts. You're seeing a lot of foul balls, more foul balls last year than hits allowed. So that, again, that has to do with velocity, that has to do with spin rate. I hope that what they're doing in the Atlantic League, I hope it works, but the guys that have high spin rates and the guys that have high velocity, they're not pitching in the Atlantic League. They're pitching in the big leagues. They're the top prospects going to the major leagues. So all those numbers have to be also, you have to wonder what percentage of that information would apply to the major league level.
Yeah. So has analytics hijacked the game in some way and transformed it to be more of a pitching and defense game and taken runs out of the game? Is it fair to say that analytics is responsible for some of that?
Absolutely not.
And if so, I mean, how do we regain balance in the game today? Or do you think we're at an equilibrium? I mean, I personally think that the game is too, you know, the three true outcomes of strikeouts, walks, and home runs are playing far too big a role in the game for its own good in terms of engagement of fans and popularity and so forth. I think fans define balls in play as action, not necessarily, you know, a 7-pitch strikeout or an 8-pitch strikeout as action with 3 foul balls included. What are your thoughts on this, Rob?
How much time do we have? I think that analytics has absolutely hijacked the game. I mean, I think that someone asked me once if I feel responsible for that. Well, sure, a little bit, but I've never thought that I had much influence over how things went. That was true 20 years ago when I started doing this sort of work, and it's true now. Certainly, I played a role, a tiny role, without knowing what would happen. Because, of course, who could foresee the technology and the impact that it would have? Look, it's clear that we've gone in the direction of 3 true outcomes, and really 2, because walks aren't really up, as you know. Mm-hmm. It's mostly mm-hmm. the home runs and the strikeouts. And I think MLB said today that these experiments they're doing in the Atlantic League are specifically to enhance player safety. I'm not so sure where I get that except for the larger bases, but that could help. But certainly, they also say that they want more balls in play, more base running. Are these not good things? I mean, yeah. I seem as a fan of baseball, the game, and not as some idealized theoretical game where we're not allowed to make any changes, which doesn't exist, has never existed in baseball before or in any other sport. I think we should be looking for more balls in play. We should be looking for, someone once said to me, might have been Boog Sciambi, baseball players doing more baseball things. That seems like an obviously reasonable goal to me. And we've gotten away from that in part because the analytics have led to more strikeouts and more mm-hmm. home runs. And part of that, of course, is bigger pitchers who throw harder. And that would have happened regardless. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you can't read all these stories about Edutronic and Rapsodo and TrackMan and think there's no relationship between all these stories and the ever-rising strikeout rates. It's mm-hmm. impossible. Mm-hmm.
John, counterpoint.
Well, first of all, I have to compliment Rob before I disagree with him. Powerball, awesome, awesome book. You got to get it. It's Rob's book that just came out.
Oh, thanks, John.
I have Rob reading it to me. It's, you know, by my bedside, and it helps me go to sleep. No, Rob is doing the audio book, so if you're too lazy to read, get Rob to read it to you. It's really cool. It's a great book about analytics. But I disagree that analytics have hijacked the game. Analytics are getting their part of the game. So, you know, analytics back, you know, 40, 50 years ago was, hey, how many home runs did he hit? How many RBIs did he have? What's his ERA? How many wins and losses? That was part of analytics. And analytics remains part of the game. You know, hijack has a negative connotation. I think they are a major part of the game, and they influence things, so they are a major part. But, you know, I don't think it's hijacked. I mean, it's almost like saying, has TV broadcast hijacked the game, or has internet info hijacked the game, or phone apps or instant replay. These things are all new things that are coming into game, adding to the game, and I think analytics really adds to the game. Yeah, analytics probably helps have led somewhat to this emphasis on, you know, throwing hard and launch angle and causing fewer balls to be in play. But I think it would evolve that way because that's what you learn. You learn as things go on, and you learn from information. And you know, we have a thirst for information, and we need the information. Mm-hmm. And we're going to gather more, and we're going to try to feed it in. And so it used to be all scouting, and now there's analytics, and the two have to be put together.
Mm. Eduardo.
Well, I was going to answer something completely different after Rob spoke, and then after when you spoke, I can't say the word hijack because of the negative connotation. So I'm going to be politically correct here and say, if you're not into the numbers of the game, if you don't accept what is going on right now in the game, you're going to be left behind. That's the bottom line. So if it's hijacking, I would say to an extent, every organization understands that there has to be a balance. That's the formula within each organization to realize how much analytics and how much scouting we can put together to create the right formula. I think the New York Yankees are doing a really good job of that. Then you have the Houston Astros, where it's not as much scouting as it is the numbers, and it's about people being able to understand the numbers and teach it to the players at the lower level to maximize what they have in their arsenal if it comes into the pitching side of it. High spin rate, let's throw the curveball. Low spin rate, let's go with a two-seamer. It identifies what the pitcher is. It's not just by eyesight, not by guess. It gives you a certainty. And that's why I love this part of the game, because there's a lot of guys out there that probably wouldn't be in the big leagues or wouldn't make it to the major leagues if it wasn't for the organizations maximizing their ability with the technology that they have to be able to say, you need to be a fastball, curveball guy. You need to be able to throw your curveball at 10% more than you used to in the past. You need to throw it up in the zone instead of down in the zone. Remember, it used to be, let's keep that fastball down. No, now the fastballs are thrown up. There's a counter to everything. And I think, yes, analytics is definitely a major component of success of organizations. We're looking at the Baltimore Orioles right now. They had zero analytics. And now, little by little, they're going to build it. They might not be good right now, but I know it's a great entry level to find out how to build an organization, especially when you have SIG that's already done the same thing in St. Louis and in Houston. So you guys know that eventually it will work with time. I don't know how many of you guys saw last year during the wild card, the StatCast game. I was blown away by it, and I was sitting right there next to Mike Petriello and Jason and Benetti, just right there. We were sitting there, and I was loving all the graphics. I thought it was a different component of the game. You see the game differently. And after that moment, I started going back to watching other games saying, wow, I wish I would have known that before. Fortunately for this year, we'll have like seven, it'll be six games that we'll be televising as far as the second screen when it comes to StatCast.
That's great.
So that's a lot of fun.
That's terrific. Rob.
I just wanted to follow up on this a little bit because all the analytics, yes, hijacked is certainly a loaded term, but all the analytics have been employed essentially to make players better and win more games, which is perfectly reasonable. Why would anyone do something different? What I would like to suggest is that for everybody in the audience who wants to do that sort of work, great. you should. But there is going to be a role, I hope, in the future, and maybe there is right now, in both Major League Baseball, in the front office, and even in the Players Association, to use all these tools, not to win games, not to enhance player performance, but to make the game itself more entertaining for fans.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, with attendance dropping multiple percentage points every year, someone is going to turn their attention to making the game more interesting. And all these numbers, all this technology, all that could be employed to make the game more fun, too. And to this point, it really hasn't happened.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was going with the question, which was, when I used the word hijacked, I meant, did it transform the game on the field inadvertently? I mean, I'm with John and everybody on the fact that we want to be more informed and we want to use this information. Where the fault I would place on MLB for not altering and tinkering with the way the game is played so that this information doesn't transform and dominate the game. Look at the NFL. The NFL changes rule after rule after rule every year. And they do that because they want to make sure that the end product is appealing to its fan base. And if you watch the NFL this year, in my opinion, it was probably as good a product as I've seen from the NFL. And it's really at its peak. They have a lot of issues, the league, culturally, et cetera. But in terms of the product on the field, baseball seems to view the rules sacred, not the outcome. Not
but
the game
in a way
on the field.
They ever did before. This is a recent thing.
That may be. That may be. But there's such a reluctance to you're watching the product change completely, and there's there's talk about it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Rob has talked about it extensively in terms of all sorts of different options, everything from pitch clock to even robo arms changes in the strike zone and all. But I'd love to see more things happen. Even with respect to the hot stove season. I mean, we talked about the convergence of thinking, and everybody sort of lines up behind the same group of players, and they value them the same way. Well, why not, and I know some of this is collectively bargained, but why not make some changes going into the offseason or make some changes midseason for the next go-round that says, okay, now the Jeff Lunos and the Theo Epsteins are going to have to try to respond to that to get a first-mover advantage. Eduardo, you had some things to say, I know. So, but yeah, I just would like to see more action going on in terms of policies, changes, so that we really pay attention to what Rob was saying, which is the product on the field.
Yeah, and one thing that I had left out also, and you had mentioned about just the game of baseball, and you mentioned football. I think it's analytics have played a heavy part in football, basketball, hockey. All around, it's in every sport. It's in every sport that we can see that advances have been made when it comes to numbers. And I even remember the first week that I was a coach in Houston, we all got together in a boardroom, and they showed us, and they said, okay, we look at if it's the New England Patriots, there are certain situations where they kick, they go for the field goal, or they decide to just go in the fourth down. Because they've used analytics, they figured it out. Why not? If the numbers are at your advantage, let's test it. So we had an open mind going in. And I think this year, we're seeing it. You mentioned the hot stove. I think one place where baseball's behind, I think it's actually with the agents. I think the agents are still lagging behind the organizations and Major League Baseball when it comes to being able to evaluate their players. What are they worth? I don't think they're there with the analytic department to say this is what the worth of the player is because this is what the future projection is going to be for the player. It's not about what you did in the past. So that philosophy has changed as far as the hot stove area. But in the game of baseball, we see the attendance going down, and we see if it's action or not action, it's almost virtually going to be impossible with the strength of the pitchers, if it's via their training in the offseason, what they're doing up in Seattle with certain programs. And again, they're just getting smarter when it comes to the pitching side of it. and the hitting is still going to lag behind. And once the hitting tries to figure it out, the pitching is going to make the adjustment. And because of all the stuff that I talked about previous with the pitchers and using, if it's the effective velocity and knowing the sequences really well, you're going to get a lot of foul balls. You're going to get a lot of swings and misses. You're going to get longer games. You're going to get longer innings. It's part of it. And to speed it up by saying 20 seconds or this and that between pitches, I don't think it's going to make that much of a dent in the game.
Yeah.
Let me jump in for just one second.
Okay, go ahead. I neglected to say at the very beginning, we're going to be taking questions in a few minutes. So if you, there's index cards in the back of the room. So if you could write your question on an index card, Jeff Schatzky will bring them up to me in a few minutes. I meant to mention that at the very beginning.
And don't forget to put for Rob, for John.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I just want to say to you, Eduardo, I'm sitting here in awe. You should look at every person out there, because we all wanted to be you. We all wanted to play baseball, and we just weren't good enough. But what you have that we also have is this love of analytics. And it's so cool to see that in a player who played the game, who knew the game from that angle, who loves the analytics and is into them and can see how they can really make a difference. So it's really cool to be here next to you, and I'm really enjoying it.
Everybody, a round of applause for me. Thank you, John.
No, seriously.
Now, what's the hard part? I know you're going to say something after that.
The hard part is I wish I could have played baseball. That was, I wish I could have played.
Well, and it's even, to take it one step further, someone who grew up around the game as a baby, as a child, you didn't have that entrenched mentality. You changed, you adapted to the game as it evolved.
But I think we all have to adapt. I think we do. I mean, I just came from HoHoCam earlier this morning, and I'm sitting speaking with Vida Blue and Bert Campaneris. And to me, those were the guys that when I was little, I was like, wow, man, I remember those 70s, those teams in the 70s. And I just imagine if they would have had all that data. The data is very, you can definitely use it to your advantage. I listen to the players. I do the 30 for 30 for SiriusXM radio. And I was in camp with the Philadelphia Phillies and in camp with the Yankees and stuff. And the players are embracing it. And, guys, this is where the game is going. The one thing that they do understand and the managers understand, a lot of young managers get it, is that communication is really important amongst the players and to let them know that not every player is the same. One number could be bad for you, but that same number could be good for the arsenal of that player. And this is my fourth year. Is this my fourth or third year? I mean, time flies here. But it's a lot of fun to see it grow, and it's a lot of fun to be able to see the players now accept it. And when I saw that ground ball, as I said yesterday, to shortstop, and nobody reacted differently, I was like, wow. Mm. That to me was
progress.
Was jaw-dropping.
Yeah. I got to ask a question. So, and this is something that's really, really close to home for you, Eduardo. If we had, and it's probably exists today, and perhaps teams are working on it, if you could have machine learning, artificial intelligence, detect pitch tipping, would you say we've crossed the line, or would you say, hey, that's fine, let's employ that technology? So now you're watching a machine, you train this machine to watch a pitcher, and you watch, 300 of his pitches, and you're now seeing that, okay, when he does, look for this, and it's done in 15 seconds or 30 seconds. What's your thought on that? This is a skill that
I would say that machine is really slow, because I could probably name that tune in three pitches. I was, and just so you guys know, in 1983, when I was a kid, I was 13 years old. I was in the Philadelphia Phillies dugout. I think you've heard this story
before.
Yeah,
I have. That's why I brought
it up. And many of you have. I was flipping seeds with John Denny, right-handed pitcher, and Steve Carlton was on the mound, and Pete Rose was on. Literally right there in the steps of the veteran dugout, and I flipped the seat and it hit Pete. Big mistake. It was my first year in uniform. I had BB on my back, and I thought I was a big leaguer. Well, he called me over with a lot of profanity, sat me next to him, and said, "From now on, if you're going to wear a uniform, a big league uniform or any uniform, you're going to sit and you're going to watch the pitcher, and that pitcher will tell you what's coming before the pitch is coming." Bottom line. And I'm 13. I don't know what a slider is. I don't know what a changeup is. But that summer of 83 changed my entire life for the better. Why? Because then I went, you know, in high school, I was like, oh, let's check this out. The 12 games we played in Puerto Rico, you know, I'm like, oh, look, big glove, changeup. Sat back, hit it. Went to college, went to Florida State, same thing. I was not a prospect. My junior year, gained some weight, got stronger, ends up going in the first round. Then in A-ball and with the Angels, I bunt a ball, hits me in the left eye. I have a dilated pupil, cataract, the whole thing. I can't see out of my left eye well. So I needed to count on and depend on what the pitchers were doing. And because of that, that day in 1983, in that summer of 83, I got through pro ball with one eye, my right eye, not my lead eye, not my dominant eye, but I was able to tell what left-handed pitchers were doing to right-handed hitters. Because lefties usually throw more of a percentage of fastball changeups with the occasional slider, but the slider and the curveball, they don't throw it for strikes unless it's like the first pitch, analytics, data, which I found out. So I needed all that data. I needed the information. I needed to study what Johan Santana did when he threw his changeup for a strike, when he didn't. Please don't yawn. Am I boring you? And then just go forward. I'm just messing with you. And then it goes forward. So I knew what Randy Johnson did. I knew what Tom Glavin did. I knew what all these guys, these good lefties would do in their certain counts and when they would throw the changeup. And if they did a little wiggle here, a little wiggle there, I was like, I got them. And sometimes with the righties, not as much. But when the righties did do something, I was able to take advantage of it and do my career that way with one eye.
You know, it's funny because I was thinking of asking you that question, why you hit lefties so well. And now you just told me. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but a lot of it, yeah, I did know a lot of what was coming, but I also knew the percentages and when they threw and when they did not throw that same pitch for a strike.
Very cool.
You know, and that's why I brought the story up. I thought, giving you an opportunity to talk about that because you're really a skill that it does not come into the public domain much. Most of the people who do what you do, do it behind the veil of a club.
Another thing that you guys are probably not aware, in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, in the table right in the middle of the clubhouse where players used to sit, they always brought in all the stats. All the stats were there. Batting average, everybody from the league to your own team, and you would look at it. I never looked at slugging. We looked at average. We looked at RBI. We just looked at the basic stuff, but it was always there. And as soon as you saw that, I was always intrigued by it. And then all of a sudden, you start getting UZR. You start getting WOBA. I asked Ryan Zimmerman the other day in West Palm Beach, what does WOB stand for? And he looked at me and he goes, is that a Star Wars character? I was like, awesome. That's all I needed to know.
You know, I'm going to shift to questions. We have some really good questions here. We have a lot of them. We won't get to all of them, but I'd like to tee a few of them up. Rob, you noted that much of the analytic work that's getting done today is proprietary. Is that a potential problem? Should ideas be peer-reviewed or subject to a case competition like we do at this conference before they're actually employed? I mean, obviously, one of the issues with that is that the data that drives that analysis is proprietary. So I don't know how you would get around that to the extent the data is not in the public domain.
Right. I don't know how you get around it either. I mean, I think that it's certainly, almost certainly true that the work would be better if it were out there for everyone to look at. I remember years ago, Bill James making that point, and he had a funny great aphorism, which I've now forgotten. But it is almost certainly true that the work would be even better and more productive if it were public, but it's not going to be public. And it isn't as if great work isn't being done regardless, or in private, because it is. I think the real, it's almost, for people like me, it's more of an emotional issue, because 10, 15 years ago, we were able to sort of feel like we were on the cutting edge. And now I can't feel remotely close to the cutting edge. And you know, that's something you deal with, and you shift to something else, so I do other work.
Yeah. John, rather than outlawing the shift, will the analytics ever solve the issue by showing that bunting or Keeler style slash hitting can be so, you know, effective, and that's the natural solution to it, players making adjustments? Do we see it happening?
So the adjustments aren't as much as you'd like to see. I guess the adjustment you mentioned is trying to hit over the shift, but so that's one adjustment that you're seeing. But I don't think the shift has caused that. I think the fact that you can be more productive if you hit a home run as opposed to hitting a single has caused that. But I just want to give my little public commentary. This concept of outlawing the shift, I'm glad to see it starting to wane, because, you know, we were talking about football and the creativeness of the defenses in football. And I think what's happening in baseball is we need to encourage that creativity. Oh, I'm glad you put up that slide. So let me just comment on that slide. So the yellow line there is the growth of shifts, the infield shifts over time since 2010. And in 2012, 13, and so on, it really grew. Tampa Bay Rays were the key in 12.
But that was me in 13. Look at it right there. That was me.
Where was you right there? There was, and then you can see it. It reached an all-time high last year. I'm sure it's going to go up again. The green and red line is the full shifts versus the partial shifts. And we found that full shifts are more effective than partial shifts by a significant amount. Shading that you get on partial shifts has not shown in the numbers to be all that effective. So going full bore and committing to three infielders on one side has been more effective. And then the white line is the beginning of the outfield shifts. It looks small, but it's like 10 to 12 in infield shifts. In 2016, there were about 1,400 shifts, outfield shifts. In 17, about 2,000. And 18, about 2,400 or 2,800, something there. So it's doubled since 16. But I think that the creativity of players, you know, Carlos Pena was one guy that a few years ago really knew how to beat the shift. He would bunt when he needed to, and he would hit for power when it was obvious that he had runners on base and had to do something different. So there are things that players can do, but I am surprised they have not done more.
I'm going to add on to that, because at the end, on the defensive standpoint, if I was the coach putting on the shift and Carlos Pena bunted on me, go for it. I wanted him to get the hit. As long as you don't hurt me with the home run, as long as I take the bat out of your hands by you bunting, you're going to pretty much log the bases. You see a lot of big guys trying to bunt. I'm like, bunt. What are you going to do?
Pena
steal second?
What Pena did, though, was he did it when he was leadoff man.
Yes, and that's why Joe put him as a leadoff guy, because of the on-base percentage and the amount of pitches that he took also. Mookie Betts yesterday told the story of Joe Mauer at the plate, and with a shift, the card said, go to right center field, leave down the line alone. Next pitch, he's like, really? Alex Cora said, do it. Next pitch, right at him. Didn't even have to move a step. I mean, it works not only in the infield, but also in the outfield.
And then he came in waving the card.
Yes,
he
did.
That was so cool. Look at this card.
That's
it's
right.
On the play there.
In the 90s, the game was about hitting. This is the question card here. Then the best players, after that, the best players were developed to pitch. Will we ever cycle back to where teams are investing more in hitters? I don't know that it's really an investment thing. There was something else going on in the 90s, too, so I don't know if that could have been a little bit.
It's a blur.
With it. But, okay, if we're going to stay silent on that one, we'll go into the...
Hitters, and I think both hitters and pitchers were guilty of what was going on in the 90s. It just didn't happen for one aspect of it. I think it also happened on the pitching side of it.
Fair. A fan saying that analytics has really increased his enjoyment, his or her enjoyment of the game within the game. How can this perception be shared better with fans? And I think, you know, the telecast that you did is a perfect example of just digging a little deeper. I did not find that to be something that you had to have an acquired taste for. I'm sure there's 25% of the fan base that would not want to see that, but it's not like that was for 15% of the fan base. That could have been appealing as a better broadcast to 75% of the fan base.
Yeah, and again, it's education. You guys might know what all those stats mean and everything, but the common baseball fan does not. So we want to educate. Mike Petriello did an unbelievable job being able to explain it, being very creative about it, and not boring you, of overwhelming you. I think Jason Benetti was phenomenal. His voice is talented, and he still gave the story of the game. And I was there to not question Mike Petriello at all, because I loved the information that he gave, but I also was there to break the game down and keep it so the average fan can say, you know what, thank you for explaining that to me, Mike, but at the same time, we also we were able to digest the game in many ways that teams see the game, and I think that's the basic thing that we wanted to do, not just overwhelm the fans by saying, I'm going to turn the channel because there's too much of too little. You're not going to see average, you're not going to see home run, you're not going to see runs. We'll, yes, show the OPS, we'll show the exit velocity, we'll show stuff that I think is really interesting to today's younger generation of fans, and educate also the older generation that doesn't understand or tries to understand what the new analytics is all about.
Let's wrap up here with a quick final thought from each of the three of you. So start with you, Rob.
Okay, my final thought. So we let off discussing the changes since the first conference, right? Along with my earlier suggestion that someone in the audience think about making the game more entertaining as opposed to winning more baseball games, I would also urge people in the audience to think about the discussions we'll be having 8 years from now. It's very easy for anyone to look at all the technology and think, wow, isn't that amazing? Look what we can do with Edgertron, look what we can do with Rapsodo. But the smartest person in this room right now is thinking about what things are going to look like 5 years from now, not what they're going to look like now or next year.
Yeah. John.
Okay, two quick thoughts, if it's okay.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment about Saber. Saber, Society of American Baseball Research, you know, we're talking about a group right now that loves analytics, and that's part of why we love the game. But it doesn't matter why you love the game. And Saber is a perfect organization. There's the biographical committee, and they love the biographical nature of the players. And then there's the players, and there's, I think that same group looks up the goes to cemeteries and makes sure they have the death dates correct for the. So if you love the player uniforms, you know, it doesn't matter why you love the game. And, you know, we love the analytics, and it's making a big part of the game, and that's really fun to see. And what about the future of analytics? I think it's something that is just part of human nature. I think I might have said this already. There's an unlimited thirst for knowledge. Man and woman have an unlimited thirst for knowledge. And what happens is you're looking for more and more information to help you make decisions, help you understand life. And baseball is a microcosm of that. We want more and more information. Statcast may be, you know, more information. It's probably more information than we can even work on over the next 100 years. If we spent 100 years on it, there'd still be more that you can get from it. But, you know, if I look back at my career, 30, 35 years, back then we had more data than we could ever analyze. And this will never end. And, you know, analytics will go on forever, and it will inform daily decisions in everything and in baseball as we go forward.
Eduardo?
I always get to finish this thing off, huh? Love it. Analytics does not have emotion. And I think that's one of the biggest things of it. It doesn't see color. It's there. It's what you're getting with that number is how a lot of teams now are evaluating their organizations and their players. And it's also how a lot of organizations are valuing actually even their fan base. So by saying that, this is going nowhere. This is actually just, I mean, not leaving us at all. It's actually going up when it comes to information. And again, it's what you see in this room, eventually it's going to have to be a bigger room because people are going to get more curious about it. I love the most impactful thing that I've heard so far today is with all the diversity that's going on in the game from what Tyron Brooks has been able to do with his group and also with the women that are present that went from 2 to 20. Guys, this is why I come to this event every year. This is why when they invite me, I'm saying yes. Because you get to see people that are interested in the game in a different realm. And eventually I've seen players, and I've educated myself by coming here, and I see players in a different light. And it's because of, yes, their talents, but the way the game is managed, the way the rosters are composed, and everything has to do with all these numbers, and it has to do a lot with the help of all these gentlemen that are up here.
Well, how about a round of applause for our great panel?
Thank you.